Good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
Hello.
Hello, good morning from me and Mrs. Trillis. How are you?
Hello, I'm very well. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you for getting up out of bed in the middle of the night. It's turned out to be a week not so full of alarms and excursions as it might have been. I noticed protesters, principally anti-racist, anti-far-right protesters, gathered at the bottom of my street on a webcam as I was preparing to hack home. But
Oh.
it was all incredibly well dissolved, I have to say. What's been your impression and experience of the past few days with what some people are calling the Farage riots,
Are
sponsored
they?
by Accurist?
Oh. Well, I've got no personal experience of it at all.
Well, I'm very
Because there's
glad to
been,
hear it.
which I'm very pleased to say, there's been nothing going on in my neck of the woods at all that I've seen directly. However, I do know a lot of people around the country who live in places where there's been considerable activity. I've got friends in Sunderland, for example, who said it was really scary. I've got friends who live in Plymouth who, were, I think, really quite shocked that the centre of town became a complete no-go area while Plymouth was descended into really scary times, as they just described it. But then obviously it all seemed to change this week with Wednesday, where there was this sort of huge rumor that there were going to be various gatherings all over the country. And then it turned out to be gatherings of people who were not in favor of the gatherings that had been mentioned in the first place.
Yeah. Mal, good morning to you. How are you? I was just taking a moment there.
Sorry, hello.
Yes, good morning to you. How are you?
Hi. Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay,
Just need
good to
to
have you
interrupt
back.
then.
Leonie and I were just talking about the riots that weren't quite riots, of course, in the wake of the horrible events in Southport. I was just mentioning the fact that I had a little bit of action on the corner of my street down here in Croydon, swiftly abated. Very impressed by the community spirit and the policing on the whole. Two white guys with knuckle dusters who appeared to be out of Central Casting cosplay near the office, muttering to themselves, didn't seem to get very far. But what are your impressions of how it's been handled and what it all means?
There's I mean, several layers to it. I think the direct far right threat can be managed. We've been there before with these groups. They've got no real public support for their for the violence and for the attacks on the police. And I think they can be dealt with. I think the more difficult issue is recognizing that on the march here, and we've been told for 10 months now with the marches in London and other cities, which have become largely pro-Hamas marches now, there were a few violent people there, but most of them were just normal citizens going along to make a point. That same analysis doesn't seem to be being applied to the other marches and protests about the apparent two-tier policing, which is a difficult charge to deny as things stand at the moment, and about just how many people are afraid that there is a philosophy which is alien to the British way of life, including alien to the way that most British Muslims live their lives. But it is deeply misogynistic. It's deeply homophobic. It doesn't, it doesn't have any respect for minority rights. All of the things that I'd like to think are the central British values of welcoming and tolerance and enjoying, diversity among people who share the same broad approach to life, but live their lives in different ways within that broad approach. And so far, it seems to me the government has not even recognize that this is an issue. After the riots in Leeds, there seemed to be hardly any response from the government about protecting what is now the white minority in some areas of our major cities. The government seems to have declared for one side of the issue and not and and rather than what I would have hoped, which was a far more saying, look, we've had anti-Semitism rising to really frightening levels in cities. That's completely unacceptable. Islamophobia is completely unacceptable, to, you know, holding individual Muslims to account for the behavior of Muslim extremists is clearly not acceptable. Recognizing that where there are white minorities, they need protecting as well. And it just hasn't happened. It seems so far that the government has been very much on, you know, come out and said, you know, it will protect mosques, but not seen anything like the same thing of protecting churches or protecting synagogues. And of course, now we've got the dreadful attacks in Bangladesh on other, you know, religious communities. So the government's got to be very careful that the more it looks like it's come down on one side of this and against, you know, the genuine concerns, I think, of many British people, the danger are that it just plays into the hands of the far right, I think.
This phrase, the white minority, is very potent, I think, very evocative, Malcolm. And it's interesting that you coin it, very instructive. An Asian woman I know in Richmond was saying that she could somehow understand why people were rioting on economic grounds, but making the, I guess, false connection between the necessary spend on things like protecting refugees, albeit the policy of the previous government very much called into question these days with the expensive vault, all of these things being false and connected in people's minds with the idea that they're in severe economic straits at the moment. That being said, Leonie, how would you respond to what Malcolm was saying there?
Well, I don't agree with what Malcolm has said there at all. I think that's a completely specious analysis. To compare marches, whether I agree with them or not, but where you've got people who are leading marches, who've liaised with the police, have got a route, the police know where they're going, that, you know, there are people who go to the march and steward it, whatever they might be marching about, you know, these are arrangements that the police can deal with, as opposed to people who've organised themselves through Telegram channels, WhatsApp groups, social media, and then have where you've got the EDL, the English Defence League, quite clearly involving themselves in getting groups of people to go to places. And if you look online, some of it is about allegedly in response to the appalling events that happened in Southport in the first place, which is allegedly what set it all off. But part of it has also been a clear attack on the new Labour governments. There's been some quite horrible stuff online with pictures of Yvette Cooper surrounded by boats and all of this stuff, and trying to say, and I have heard people being interviewed doing Vox Pop saying quite openly, now there's a new government, the borders are just going to open try, you know, and there's elements of what happened on January the 6th with people trying to overthrow the results in America. And some of these people are really unhappy that there is a new Labour government. And so there's that sort of theme from those people. Then there's been a whole group of people who've then just turned up, some of them possibly because they were drunk or on drugs, which also seems to have been the case with some people. Yeah, just gone along for the hell of it, because they think there's going to be a fight. But then there are other people who have got views about immigration who've then felt that they wanted to go along. And that's the only part of Malcolm's comments where I do think there is an issue here with just dismissing everybody who's gone on the marches as just thugs, because that's clearly not the case. But they are clearly being organised by some very unpleasant people, or at least they've attempted to organise them. Perhaps from this week it's proving less possible for them to do that. But a lot of it was just about, you know, we're going to go and attack things. You know, there's a lot of difference between people gathering near a hotel and then breaking every window down a street of people's houses And people, however distasteful, you know, anybody might find, you know, fr the chance of from the rivers to the sea, and that sort of thing. You know, going on a march on a route through central London, even if it is every Saturday, which has annoyed people, even if some of the people who turned up haven't behaved well, that's very different from a load of people gathering near, you know, a hotel that's being used for homeless people and breaking its windows and trying to break in and intimidating the staff and the people who are staying there. So I think there's no equivalence between those things at all. And I actually think it's quite outrageous that Malcolm has tried to make equivalence whatsoever. And it's completely untrue to suggest that, you know, there's been additional measures supplied to mosques, but not to synagogues. You know, talk to the Community Safety Trust, Malcolm. That's just not true. There have been a lot of additional. Talk to the local police. Talk to Claire Cullen, the, you know, the borough commander who covers Wandsworth. There's been a lot of work that has been done since October the 7th in terms of strengthening support for the Jewish community and providing additional safety for synagogues. So that is just absolutely not true at all. So I think, you know, I think this really does need to be strongly challenged because there's a lot of people spreading complete nonsense on social media, and it's not good enough for us to do a podcast
Well,
and
hang on.
spread the same kind of stuff, Malcolm.
Okay, so let's look at what went on in Leeds. Now, remembering that what happened in Leeds was triggered because, as it seems to be, that a Muslim family refused to allow security guards at Manchester Airport to check their bags for weapons. They broke the nose of a police officer and viciously attacked police officers, and then another police officer was shown. Using very considerable force against one of the perpetrators.
Saying it was just part of the job, yeah.
Now, I didn't get the impression that the riot that happened in Leeds a couple of days later had been planned with the police. In fact, we saw the signs of the police running away from the, you know, en masse running away from the from that riot, which, you know, as bad as the ones in as well, also involved attacks on individual people's homes, cars being overturned and burnt. And I think the unfortunate idea that it's okay, the impression that is less serious because it was a Muslim riot than the dreadful ones that we've seen elsewhere perpetrated by the far right, is, I think, very dangerous towards community cohesion. They need to be treated the same way. I absolutely agree that the scenes that we saw in the riots perpetrated by the far right. Not sure if it's the English Defence League, which was pretty much disbanded 12 years ago, but there are clearly successor organisations out there, and quite rightly they are being attacked. But the idea that is absolutely unacceptable, but the riots in Leeds were okay for some reason, and that's the impression which is being given out there. And I'm afraid that there is a difference between a violent march and a peaceful march which advocates violence. And that's the problem that I've got with the London ones. Not that there is, you know, rioting in the sense of that, there clearly isn't. And Leonie's absolutely right to make that point. But nonetheless, it has now become very acceptable to wave Hezbollah flags, to wave Hamas flags on these. And the usual suspects turn up at these marches completely unworried by the fact that there are people there advocating openly for proscribed terrorist organizations. And we can say, okay, now that's fine. It's because there is little violence in the march itself, which is Leonie's quite right to make that point. I just a year ago, it would have been unheard, pretty much unheard of. There were a couple of isolated incidents that were red flags with the benefit of hindsight. But the idea that the people could be out in the street actively advocating for regimes that where homosexuality is persecuted, not just illegal, that there are areas there like the Houthis, which have executed considerable numbers of homosexuals just in the course of the last few weeks. And you, I hope, forgive me for being particularly concerned about that issue. And yet there are open calls in the streets for, you know, celebrating the spread of the Houthis there. Now, this is, I think, extremely worrying. And to simply write that off as saying that's okay because it's peaceful, we should be very relaxed about this growing sense of support for overt terrorist organizations. I think that there is a risk in being as relaxed about that as Leonie clearly is.
Hang on a minute. I mean, you are putting a lot of words in my mouth there, Malcolm. I did not say I was relaxed about the marches through the centre of London at all. And in fact, you know, I have considerable concerns about them. What I was doing was challenging you, saying that there was some sort of equivalence between a march where the organisers have made arrangements with the police, agreed the route, have got stewards and that sort of thing. I didn't say that I condone any of the chanting. And in fact, I actually mentioned From the River to the Sea as being something that I absolutely do not condone. And I certainly think that anybody who's waving either a Hamas flag or a Hezbollah flag should be arrested on the spot for supporting prescribed terrorist organisations. So I just want to be absolutely clear.
But it's not happening, anybody.
Well, I'm not... I'm not saying that, yeah, but I mean, there's hundreds of people who've just been out on the streets rioting from Plymouth to Newcastle, and not every one of those has been arrested either. I mean, there have been there have been some people arrested on some of these riots, which they have been rather than protests, and there have been some people arrested on these marches. In my opinion, there should be more people arrested at the riots from Plymouth to Newcastle. But in my opinion, also, there should be more people arrested who are waving these flags. Parachutes, if you remember, there were also people with parachutes. And there should be far more of them should be arrested as well. So I would agree with you that there have not been sufficient arrests. And of course, I don't condone the violence that happened in Leeds. I think, you know, that stuff at Manchester Airport was really, really shocking. I think the police were, you know, did not show themselves in a good light. I mean, that's putting it mildly. But also, I think the reaction of the people afterwards was, you know, that absolutely should not be condoned either. And I didn't say that. Anyway, Andy, sorry, you wanted to bring in Graham.
If I may, just as an aside there, there's been several people making points along the lines of the fact that terrorism and political violence are subtly different things. But here we have a situation where the Gaza issue is, as it were, profound and important as it is tailgating on an entirely different matter. And the whole thing, as it were, is conflated by the polyglot position of the right wing. Interesting to see who appears to be funding Tommy Robinson in his four-star hotel, from including several apparently Zionist American think tanks, according to the Byline Times and the Goliad. Anyway, be that as it may, Graham, what are your impressions of the past week and the gumbo of unpleasantness, really, that seems to have been triggered by this horrible event in Southport?
Well, I think it argues for the greater differentiation in riots and protests, because you obviously
a graduated response is what you're saying, a measured response.
Well, no, the analysis of and reporting of it as to you know what is actually going on. Because that's it's not immediately apparent when you just watch a riot. What's what they're rioting about?
So they should have been, isn't it? Yeah.
Who's doing what? Yeah. So it's because all the international right wants to do is to sow discontent and confusion, and that's the easiest way to do it. So without the explanations and reporting, then people are very likely to pick up the wrong idea about what's going on.
It's cynics might say it's also a very good time for a government of whatever stripe to reconsider its public order legislation and possibly impose even greater restrictions on dissent than were proposed by the previous government, or indeed to maintain their existence.
No, but that's what the extreme right want is for repression. And I don't think there's plenty of law in place, to prevent riots. It's just a question of training the police to use it properly. There's big temptation when you're on the street to just revert to defending yourself. So, and that's what the rioters and the provocateurs are trying to do, is to demonstrate the brutality of police, to get people angry, and angry enough to go and riot on the streets. And that's the universal tactic worldwide. Alistair Campbell pointed out that Xi Jinping and Putin are not trying to take over the West. They're just trying to undermine it and destroy it from within. Xi Jinping famously said that the best way to win a battle is the best way to win a war is without a battle. So all you do is undermine the society that you're trying to undermine, that you're trying you disrupt and disorganize and create chaos in the societies.
So subcontracting, really.
Well, absolutely. Putin is a martial arts expert. He knows the best way to defeat the opponent is to use their own strength.
I suppose that cuts both ways, doesn't it, in terms of the type of resistance that the public in general seem to mount against curiously small amount of actual far-right activities last week. It's been suggested by the Prime Minister that we still need to remain on high alert.
Well, the extraordinary fact was that you get peaceful marches preventing riots. I mean, that's the takeaway point, isn't it? Surely.
Indeed, as I say, I'm speaking from Croydon here, where there was just such a gathering at the end of my street. All very deftly organised and dispersed, I noted, with the exception of a couple of individuals who were looking a bit shifty, who I think probably easily were easily arrested. Anyhow, what do you think, guys, Sir Leonie Mao, about what Graham is saying about infiltration from without? We note that apparently Tommy Robinson, for example, is funded by people who are in a position to influence things financially.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a considerable amount in that, and tactically, it's always been, as Graham says, going back many centuries, the great Chinese warlords. This was always recognised as an extremely effective tactic in large scale conflicts, in large scale, relatively slow moving conflicts, which this has been, I think. But it's only part of the picture. What's going on at that point? It's only the role of the hard left in this can't be written out of the picture either, because there are deep forces in, I think, very dark forces coming from the extreme left as well, which regard the we've seen in the group that organised the anti-Semitic protests in the American universities, which have really become a focus for hardline anti-Semitism over the last year, just producing a point, a statement saying its ultimate aim is to destroy American society. There is a counter set of these very dark forces, and where the rest of us who lie in the middle on this and who are genuinely appalled by the far right and the far left, we need to keep both of those flanks in mind. We need to recognise it's not just international right-wing money going into this. There is a lot of money coming from the opposite side of politics as well. And this is where it becomes so damaging, I think, that those who perpetrated the attacks on the police officers in Manchester, as I understand it, have not been charged with any offence whatsoever. Whereas within a week, we've had someone who's stated crime was shouting at police officers has been given 2 years in prison. Now, I've no sympathy for people who go on marches and shout at police, and 2 years in prison sounds fair enough. But again, in the context that as Leonie has recognized, I'm not sure that Leonie and I are quite as far away from each other as it sounded initially there. But seeing the ongoing, you know, we saw that famous Sky News report during the week from Rotherham, I think it was, where she was saying this was a far right, the reporter was saying this was a far right march there. And as she was speaking, a gang of what clearly looked like Muslims, I don't know if they were, but I'm assuming they were, with machetes came down the road towards her. And another one, in another incident, tried to slash the tyres of a Sky van. Now, those people are not being arrested. Fortunately, the Labour MP who yesterday was shouting and crying, encouraging people to slit the throats of people he disagreed with, has been arrested. And that I think is an encouraging move. But it'll be interesting to see if he is treated in the same way as the man who shouted at police is treated. And this deeply ingrained feeling that you can get away with wandering around with a massive machete if you're on one side of this, but a woman has been arrested in the north of England for making an inaccurate tweet. This idea that people are being treated dramatically differently, dependent on where they are perceived to being in this, is that's at least as much doing the job of the those who want to undermine British society as is international money, I think.
So consistency at a very early stage in the new government. Not an easy thing to achieve, but I think you're highlighting inconsistencies, you say, in policing as well. I mean, I feel, although I don't, this is going to sound tasteless, but I don't mean it that way, there is an element of juvenile cosplay going on here. To say it's in poor taste would be the least of it, but I look at those two white guys with the knuckle dusters. You see perhaps an intent of violence, but no sort of measured consciousness behind it. This could potentially be true of any young person in possession of a degree of testosterone, of whatever kilter. And that needs education and management. Anyway, Leonie, where are we at now?
Well, I think there's a lot more misinformation there from Malcolm. And I think weaving together what's been going on in America with what's going on in this country, again, is misinformation.
What misinformation? I didn't
interrupt you, Malcolm, so I'd quite appreciate it if you didn't interrupt me. Well, completely misinformed about the person who's been arrested who was videoed shouting about slitting people's throats. That person is not an MP. They are a councillor. You said they were an MP. Quite rightly should have been arrested. And if any other councillor from whatever party is shouting anything like that, they should be arrested as well. Anybody going down the street with a machete, and there has been a video which I have seen, which showed a marauding gang of people with machetes, but there's been loads of other videos of other large groups of people smashing windows and turning over cars and setting lights to things. I think they should all be arrested and they should all be charged. And the police have made it quite clear that anybody who has involved themselves in violence or is, can be charged for threatening violence will be arrested. But the thing is, obviously, you have to go through all the material, and there's obviously quite a lot of material that has been created and recorded from all of these numerous incidents, and so far only a small number of people have ended up in court. So to suggest that there's one group of people who are being treated differently from others, I think is just listening to conspiracy theories from one side on the internet. I am not suggesting that there is one group of people who need to be treated more harshly than others. I think everybody should be treated equally harshly. If you go out with the intention of behaving badly and breaking the law, then, I think you should be arrested and you should feel the full force of the law. What I do think we haven't discussed and I think it does need further discussion, is the way that the internet has got involved in all of this, and the way that people are using social media to advertise. And I'm starting to wonder whether the online safety bill, which the government dragged its heels over bringing through Parliament and watered down many aspects, whether that's going to really be fit for purpose, or whether it's going to need to be beefed up almost immediately, because it's quite clear that there's a lot of stuff on the internet that is that should be immediately taken down. And where X, or Twitter as was, used to be moderated to a large degree, it's absolutely the Wild West now. And Elon Musk himself has been posting some appalling tweets. So talking about dark forces and people with money behind them, obviously the second richest person in the entire world. I mean, tweeting at Keir Starmer and trying to, encourage, mayhem on the streets of the UK. He's gone out of his way to involve himself in it. Plus a lot of people using these platforms. And I think that will need to be looked at.
Well, could Elon Musk himself be prosecuted under the online safety bill? It's a curious thought, isn't it? Graham, you've talked about this a great deal, and you've read widely on the subject. What do you make of Leonie's point there about the role of social media and all this?
Well, I think it's almost entirely from social media. It's only now possible to make
anti-social media, you might say. Yeah,
anti-social media. Because the primary effect is to divide people, and that's the effect of the technology worldwide. And on Malcolm's point about left and right, extreme left as well, of course, it's because we get the Communist Party of China working with the Fascist Party of Russia. So it's the right and left joined together. That is exactly the danger. So I think it comes back to better analysis of, first of all, historical precedents for the behavior of people, and also encouraging the good signs when peaceful people come out to prevent riots. I think that's a major step forward in participation.
I think that's a really well-made point, actually, about the link-up between China and Russia. I've been quite concerned that the Trump pick for Vice President Vance has just been talking about, the need to face off with China. And we know what Trump did last time, which was basically cozied up a bit to Russia. I think they are fundamentally
hotel rooms, I think. Anyway,
fundamentally missing the point that Vladimir Putin has been cozying up to Xi Jinping. And Xi Jinping rolled out a very, very large literal red carpet for him on a recent trip to China. Now, there aren't actually that many places outside of Russia that Putin can go to now, because he's got an international arrest warrant has been issued for him because of all his, overseeing of huge numbers of war crimes, not least abducting children from Ukraine and taking them to Russia and rehoming them with new families to try and complete. I mean, it is genocide that he's trying to perpetrate against the Ukrainians, and refusing to recognize that Ukrainians are a separate people from Russians, and just treating them as if they are Russians and as if their territory is Russia. But it's quite clear that the Chinese, I don't know whether you could quite go as far as to say condone what he's doing, but the Chinese certainly have taken no action to stop him from what he's doing. And obviously Iran has been very busy selling drones and potentially other weapons to him. So I think this link up, and of course we have also heard the North Koreans coming out and quite explicitly saying, we hope Donald Trump wins because we think we can do business with him. So I do have significant concerns about the return of a Trump presidency. from next January if he wins in November. So I think it's been quite interesting looking at the more recent developments in terms of Biden stepping down and being replaced by Harris. And of course, she's just picked her own vice president running mate just this week.
And how are they faring? I think they were in Detroit yesterday, getting a compact but enthusiastic welcome from the Teamsters down there, appealing to an industrial heartland that is still quite vociferous and rather than more and can organise, as Joe Hill put it. But Trump allegedly in somewhat in meltdown at the moment, advancing his the sofa allegation, and we talked about the misogyny last time. But Harris Vance sort of inching ahead a little bit, but all to play for. Very strategic campaigning going on, as you would expect.
Well, it's extremely good news. I mean, the reception of Kamala Harris has been extremely encouraging, and she's now picked a mate, which seems to be a balancing act to get the heart of America. People, she said, he can talk to the middle class, and he used an extremely appropriate word to describe the Republicans by just saying that they're extremely weird people.
It's been
Which is
very interesting in the States, and it's a tribute to the Harris campaign how they have taken all of the insults that for the Trump campaign have been throwing and have made them into memes and made them into videos, and it's extraordinarily effective. It's remarkable because they are, in effect, very effectively just ridiculing some of the ridiculous claims from the Trump campaign. And now all of these insults from the Trump campaign are basically owned by the Harris campaign. It's very, very interesting to watch it develop. I've not seen that done in a campaign before. And of course, that's only possible because of social media. And you get this dreadful dilemma that we're in. And I don't think we've begun to think about this. On the one hand, we can say, well, we should be banning social media because of the role it plays in facilitating some of the riots, the far right and far left riots that we've been talking about today. And it clearly does. It makes it much easier for people to organize those kinds of atrocities. But at the same time, it's an extraordinarily powerful tool in countering that sort of philosophy and to spreading good news as the Harris campaign has done, turning negatives into positives. I just don't think, and the kind of whispers going around at the moment of just banning X or Twitter altogether, is horrendous. But equivalently, some of the stuff on Twitter and X is horrendous. And I don't quite know how we move forward on that. All my instincts are to preserve as much freedom of speech as we possibly can. Without it getting to the point that we allow anti-Semitic memes, Islamophobic memes, and all of the others to just become everyday and unremarked upon. But I don't know where you draw that line. I'm not sure we've started to have a proper sensible debate about it.
Well, try and reinforce. I'm sorry, Naomi.
Well, I was going to say, you don't talk about banning these things, and I certainly have never said that you need to ban social media, but I do think it needs to be moderated. The difference between we have our own, because we're very special in Firsdown, where I live, we have our own Firsdown IO group, which is moderated, unlike Nextdoor, which is the one that most people have that's, proliferated all over the place, which is completely unmoderated, where people get into sort of fairly hefty argy-bargy with each other. I mean, we don't allow swearing on ours. We don't allow insults. We
Well,
do
why
allow,
people up on those
we
other
do,
platforms, if I locally, so much interaction there.
we do allow a very high degree of people exchanging a full and frank exchange of views. We don't allow, if people want to post something about a local tradesperson who they think is rubbish, that will also not get through the moderators. We don't allow. It's the removal of insults and gratuitous sort of fights between people on it, which actually other people who log on and want to, you know, find the advert for the child's bicycle or the child's car seat, you know, you want to lean over the garden fence, which is essentially what these sort of social media things allow you to do, and listen to your, not quite all of the 16,000 people that live locally, but there's probably about 5,000 people are logged onto it. But you don't really want to watch them having a completely unseemly argument or fisticuffs or anything like that. And I think the thing with X is it used to have moderators. If you reported somebody for hate speech, they would either shut the account or they would certainly take action. Now, if you report anybody on X, and I've just given up doing it now, I just mute accounts that if they're really full of horrible anti-Semitic or Islamophobic or just generally just horrible hate speech about anybody, they take no action at all whatsoever. And that was completely apparent recently during the, particularly during the Greater London Authority elections, because the amount of hate speech that is thrown towards Sadiq Khan as a mayor who happens to be Muslim, you know, was quite astonishing. And if you've not seen it, then you're very lucky. I've unfortunately experienced, you know, quite a lot of the backwash from it because of having been on the same sort of campaign team with Sadiq Khan. But, you know, just getting some sort of moderation in there to stop hate speech, you know, that I do not think should be permitted on social media. I think, you know, fun videos, I think turning horrible statements into funny TikTok memes, all of those are all good fun. You know, I hope Kamala Harris can completely own the cat lady insult and turn that into an absolute. I need to get my cat to pose with me so that I can become an internet cat lady as well. You know, I mean, you can turn some of these things around, okay. But yeah, it's the hate speech that has to go.
TikTok, of course, is difficult, banned, and it's been banned at the White House, isn't it, under the Biden administration? And China has its own social media and can block the other thing. Sorry, Mally, what?
The difficulty is that someone has to define what hate speech is, and that inevitably is going to be very. Take as well, Clive Lewis, who is a Labour MP, the only who's quite right to pick me up for misspeaking about the guy who's calling to slit the throats. He was indeed a Labour councillor, not a Labour MP, and I was wrong on that. But Clive Lewis is a Labour MP. He's at the moment in East Anglia. There's a group of women students who are arguing that their changing rooms should be reserved for biological women. Now, Clive Lewis has come out and called that group fascist for holding that view. Presumably, therefore, presumably, through that is saying that women arguing that women should have spaces where biological males are not allowed is hate speech and therefore should be banned. And the problem is that the nature of freedom of speech is, you know, freedom of speech doesn't really mean anything unless at its heart it's got a right to offend people and a right to hold views that other people might find quite extreme. But of course, there being a line somewhere beyond which you would not allow things to go. And so, for example, Holocaust denial is generally regarded as being beyond that line, and quite rightly too. But where we are at the moment is there's so much disagreement as to what actually hate speech consists of. Things that I would regard as being legitimate areas for discussion and debate and trying to come to some compromise, and the trans issue is a very clear one on that. But you can't for many areas you can't have that without having Labour MPs attacking one side of being fascist just for holding a different view on what is obviously a very complex issue. And so that's always the problem here, is if the censorship was done in line with what I think is fair to discuss, I suppose I wouldn't object to it too much. But it's all of us, when the censorship comes in, or the moderation, or whatever you want to call it, comes in at the point where it starts to prevent us from discussing things that we think are important. And
well,
again,
that,
I don't know
yeah.
how you actually manage to square that circle, because it's a very difficult one.
This word moderation seems to be very resonant. I think they're in the rhetoric after previous protests, I believe that you would hear people saying or speaking of or calling for moderation. Moderation is now, as it were, an active verb online. And as I think you're quite right to identify the fact that there's a distinct shortage of it. And in parliamentary time, you have the whips and various other Erskine May procedures, and of course the speaker themselves to maintain order. But in the public square, people like Lewis and others on the other side of the political spectrum, and the previous administration particularly, the Brabhamans and so forth, were able to be provocative in ways that grab the headlines, but some would say could be having wider ripples.
I don't think we should confuse, the legal definitions of hate speech for which and that sort of thing with, the views of Labour MPs or people just shouting at each other. I mean, we saw plenty of that also from Conservative MPs shouting at Labour MPs in the House of Commons, where, of course, they're subject to parliamentary privilege because they can say they can all say what they like in there. I don't think Clive Lewis is going to be the arbiter of what constitutes fascism, because that is very loose language and very ill applied to the point that was being made by those women, whether you agree with their point or not. I mean, that is clearly nonsense coming from him. There's a lot of nonsense that comes from the mouths of MPs, just as there's nonsense that comes from the mouths of other people. That is clearly upping the ante from Lewis. That is, I would classify that as nonsense. But I wouldn't say that what he has said is hate speech. I wouldn't have said what they have said is hate speech. I think we can differentiate between, death threats to someone because they're Jewish or because they're Muslim. That is hate speech. Or
so
denigrating,
and stress,
there is quite a substantial difference here, and I think it is actually also recognised in the law, Malcolm. So again, I don't think we should confuse something that Clive Lewis might have annoyed you with his remark, or possibly even something a bit stronger than that. But that's on a completely different level. That's him, use it as an example, because it's then going into another very large debate. I think we've covered anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. We've covered the riots. We've covered, whether or not there really is two-tier policing. We've just had a little stray into what's going on in America. I don't think we can do the trans debate in one podcast as well, because that would just be going too far.
I think it does make the point that these things get drawn in to the unmoderated public square, don't they? And if there's the chance, in the view of some people,
yes,
for a bit of random Barneying, they're up for it. And
yes,
it doesn't advance the debate.
But can I also just make the point that underlying a lot of this, and this is why we actually need to have that moderation and also personally exercise it, are people. And I know people who've transitioned, and their lives are really not easy. And most of them don't spend their life on a soapbox shouting about "I want access to."
Oh, that's
women.
So true. Exactly.
I mean, they are getting on with their lives. The families in Southport who had this appalling thing happen to them, and probably perpetrated by a boy born in this country who seems to have come from a very strongly Christian household. I'm not shouting about Christians and the way that they, Rwandan Christians have turned their child into a killing machine. Shouting these things doesn't help the Southport families. We just need to always be mindful, for all that people treat Sadiq Khan as if he has no feelings and isn't human and is just there to be turned into, he's been turned into a very unpleasant meme with gun sights fixed over his head and body and things like this, and crosshairs. I mean, there are people here in the centre of these things. That's why we need to be moderate.
Graham, can I just bring you in as our constitutional expert, or one of the three of you? What about moderation, where we're at the moment, in terms of the online safety bill, in terms of encouraging MPs to be a little more measured in what they say in the public square? Would that help, and how could it be implemented?
Well, I think you're getting an example of the bad actor theory. You know, the technology, new technologies, are always going to be used by the bad actors first, and this is what has happened worldwide. And now you're getting the learning process of how to use them properly and moderately.
Mm.
People are using. There's a very good newscast in the States where someone was interviewing a Trump supporter and responded by just saying, "Well, keep going. You're doing a great job in destroying the Republican Party," because they have become absurd, they're now the initial response was just fear and responding by hatred, but now it's people have learned to respond by ridicule and pointing out how absurd these people are, and our extreme minorities. They're always minorities, and that's what the propaganda techniques always recognize and utilize, is the fact that with a very small group of people, you can make enormous effects, you know, if you get the communication.
I suppose you could say Lord Haw Haw was trying to do much the same thing.
Well, exactly.
It's very good humorist, you know. Yeah.
And he was hung for it.
Yeah. Yeah. So pointing out how powerful this is, but how, as you say, how temporizing it can be when it's well done and done with the with depth and sincerity. Well, there's a grain of hope, I suppose, in challenging times. Thank you all very much.
A marker for AI. You know, which way AI is going to go.
Yeah.
Because AI can, of course, dampen these things immediately.
Yeah. Well, we've got a few minutes left. I wonder if we could just do a volte-face over to Paris and the Olympics and our impressions of how we've done, how they've done, a cordon sanitaire around certain parts of the city, but no unrest about it, at least not latterly.
I watched the new sport of, I don't know what it's called, sort of windsurfing, I suppose.
Hmm.
Kite surfing, I think it's called.
Is it kite surfing? Well,
I think so.
The keel raises out of the water with the speed.
Yeah, there's something else that where they had that as well, but certainly the kite surfing was a medal match was on yesterday. Was that the one that you were watching?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Not
least because a young British woman won.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
It was incredible.
Against France and the
she
US.
You can escape this.
Well, it's wonderful. Well, example of the correct introduction of new technology.
It was brilliant, wasn't it? It was absolutely amazing. Yeah. I'm really, you know, I'm really enjoying it. But once every, well, in this case, it's 3 years since the bizarrely still called the Tokyo 2020 Games that took place in 2021. But once every 4 years, I have an orgy of watching sport on television. And what's so amazing about this one is there isn't a huge time difference between us and Paris. Paris is on Central European time, so they're just an hour ahead. So, you know, it starts at 8 o'clock in the morning, so 9 o'clock their time, and it finishes at 9 o'clock our time, so 10 o'clock their time. And it's just been fantastic. As I watched the Seoul Olympics, you know, from Korea, and the time difference was terrible. Beijing, terrible time difference, not terrible Olympics. Tokyo was pretty impossible last time as well. This is fantastic. I won't enjoy LA next time because they'll be sort of, you know, showing things in the middle of the night and all that kind
it's
of stuff.
Like that, isn't it? Yes.
But it's It's been great. I really enjoyed it. I was a bit disappointed the cycling didn't start earlier, but in the velodrome, but that's now off and running. And that's, I mean, they go so fast. I mean, 70 kilometers an hour going around that velodrome. Absolutely terrifying because they're all at an
Not
angle as
surprised how
well.
they're your mobility security.
It's just, but I just love it, and I really enjoyed the horse riding. I thought the course where you could see Versailles in the background. I love the way the road races, both the road races on foot and the road races on cycling, have come over the bridge, and you can see the Eiffel Tower in the background. To be honest with you, I didn't think that much of the opening ceremony. I imagine that for the rest of the world, it was a bit obscure, but I thought that about the London one as well, that people might have found some of the London opening ceremony a bit obscure as well. There were some bits that were a bit kind of like playing to British issues, and I think it was the same with the French one. But I am really enjoying it myself. And I've been watching a whole heap more of the Olympics, and I've been watching rioting on the television, that's for sure.
Indeed, and
I think France has to be congratulated on turning the whole thing into such a cultural success. The use of culture, to amplify the whole games, and using the city of Paris as the sort of grand stadium rather than separate stadiums. And
Brilliant.
the opening ceremony was spectacular. It's fantastic. They're using the river itself.
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure about that.
Well, it's an extraordinary sight. And I didn't object to having Frenchness. I mean, I think if you go to a country, that's what you expect, is what's different about the country and what you don't know about the country, rather than expecting the same thing you'd see in any other country.
Yeah, so it arouses curiosity amongst anything else, I suppose. And Mal, are you also an enthusiastic Olympian about
I
what
mean,
you're seeing?
I do agree with Graham that there's the Olympics in their ideal manage to marry those two great things about humanity, of our loyalty to our individual countries and our recognition of greatness in other countries. And so I think it's entirely appropriate. I went to the opening ceremony in London, and it was just stunning. And I think most of it I did understand, but the way that it was carried out, the technical brilliance of the, I think all particularly of where they converted the pre-industrial landscape into the Industrial Revolution landscape, the technical brilliance of that was just breathtaking, the way that happened. And rightly, I think London used the Olympics as an advert to the world of what London is capable of and is about, and just as Rio did the same, and Beijing, and it's lovely to see the French doing the same. I thought I didn't like their opening ceremony, but I do agree that the what's happened since then has been run extremely well and has been very exciting. And for me, the moment was just watching the end of Andy Murray's tennis career. Actually, it was a very moving moment. And he did a tweet afterwards. He said, "I never really liked tennis,"
It's
which
so funny.
I thought
That's
was
so funny.
magnificent. Yeah, just wonderful, wonderful little, and an example of how, why I would miss Twitter enormously if it ever were seriously to be done there. It was just such a lovely humorous, quirky way to end the career of one of the great British sportsmen of all time. So for me, that was the moment I think that really stuck in my will stick in my mind. But there have been many good things the French have done extremely well, and I think we should say after what I thought was a bit of a dodgy start, but I think they do deserve warm congratulations.
Well, bravo, and let's hope we're all as fortunate in a week's time. Thank you all very much.
Cheers,
Cheers.
everybody.
Cheers. Have a
Good
great weekend.
weekend.